Welcome to Smart Water Solutions Podcast. I am Hakim El Fadil. This is episode number 81. Today's guest is Maxime Trillon, the head of business development at Osmosun. Osmosun is a company that is combining solar energy with reverse osmosis to produce drinkable water from seawater. So we are going to cover this combination of two interesting technologies and try to understand the technical challenges of this combination in different region, and also how can from the engineering standpoint can we improve the efficiency of this combination.
Agreed. So the first question I would like to ask you, the journey that's bring you to the water space,
as an individual or as an individual. I think that's a good question, and it's a very personal one, and it's about the impact and satisfaction to deliver services that make sense, like addressing vital needs for people to get fresh water. So that's really was appealing in the first place.
Yeah, that's great. And then the name is, it's actually from the moment I saw the name, is for me, it's clear. It's osmosis coupled with, let's say, sun energy. I mean, would you just give some background behind the name and the company? What was the vision at the beginning and how it has been shifted with the time?
So the company was founded in 2014. So this year is going to be the 10th year of the company. And we have been created by two experienced entrepreneurs that had that vision that water scarcity was becoming a growing issue for a growing number of countries, and that new ways of producing and supplying fresh water were needed, including desalination, but that the reasons behind the challenges to get enough fresh water for these water scarce regions is actually in a lot of like ways due to climate change. So their vision was really to develop a water supply solution that would address today's water challenges without making tomorrow's worse by consuming more fossil fuels in the implementation of projects. So that's when they were like, okay, we can use some mature technologies that are out there, like reverse osmosis and photovoltaic solar energy. Both of them are respectively the most cost competitive of their field. Should that be for desalination, reverse osmosis is what is done the most cost competitive as of now. And on the other hand, solar energy is the cheapest energy source that exists, but it is fluctuating. So if there are like rain clouds and like just in the morning and in the evening, it is ramping up and down. And that means that the reverse osmosis membranes need to adjust and to adapt to the solar energy availability. And then this is when they were like, okay, we need to develop that patent that technology so that the reverse osmosis can adjust and the reverse osmosis can operate 100% solar powered with no grid regulation or any kind of battery storage. And eventually that happened to be so optimum of the pairing of these two technologies that it has turned out to be a very cost competitive way of producing fresh water.
Great. I mean, in terms of, you mentioned a very good point, it's a patent. I mean, what is, let's say, just on a high level, if we would like, the innovation that is really, I mean, if you can break down the technological part of combining reverse osmosis with desalination, with the solar power, in a way that you mentioned, you don't need battery, you don't need to be on a grid. So what is the innovation there?
So the innovation really lies in like three different levels. The first one is the electrical level. So it's the energy management cabinet. There is an optimum tracking point to get as much solar energy that is generated at a given point in time and through the pyranometer and then the algorithm, which is the second element, which is driving the whole process. So the The PLC and the program developed in it are enabling this optimum pairing, and eventually this is in the hydraulic part. The membrane cannot cope with the fluctuation if there is no way to level the hammer effect and have a buffer that is leveling the water fluctuation. So that's the different, the three different levels that at a high level presentation I can talk about.
Yeah, in terms of, I mean, in the night there is no sun, so how it managed to produce the water in the night?
So it is a start, like the cost competitiveness of solar energy makes it so competitive to produce more during the day and to store water, that it becomes more interesting to store water rather than storing energy, because it's pretty obvious the cost of water reservoirs versus the cost of batteries.
So when they did that, would you, I mean, share some, let's say, the first countries or the first case studies where they have done this units, and how much, let's say, valuable in terms of cost for those people compared to the water from the city?
So the first pilot project, like the first prototype, let's say, was in the facility in France, which was tiny at the time. And since then, of course, I mean, right after that, there were a demonstrator on site in Abu Dhabi from the program led by Masdar, the renewable agency of the Emirate of Abu Dhabi, which was called the Renewable Energy Desalination Program, or Renewable Energy Power Desalination Program. That was a massive call for innovation and innovative projects, among which our solution as Osmosen was shortlisted. And we hence were able to implement the first plant on site with the very saline water of the Gulf there, and we demonstrated that it was pairing perfectly reverse osmosis and solar energy. So that really was the starting point on the ground, and from there it had dragged a lot of interest from different utilities, water companies of different countries of the world, and even on the facility in Abu Dhabi itself. Like, we had the chance to be located besides projects from Veolia, from Suez, from Abengoa. So that was just among them already a pretty fascinating development for them all. And from there, so that interest from Suez turned out into another demonstration project, like more of a commercial demonstration after a more technical demonstration in Abu Dhabi, on their as their utility in the Pacific island, that's relying on desalination, and that has very high energy cost on the small island. So from there, yeah, commercial demonstration in Bora Bora, Polynesia, and then from there we rolled it out in different countries with Mauritius, Africa, Cape Verde, and so on, and here we are now.
Yeah, when you mention Veolia, I mean, it's most of the time we're talking about a large scale. So for Osmosan, what are the scales that let's say it's your core competence?
So we do desalination projects from a few cubic meters per day all the way to 20,000 cubic meters per day as of now. And for the small scale, it could be 100% solar powered for solar energy supply of the unit only, and storing the water at night. And then when we have bigger projects, the limitation is a lot more in the land availability to implement the solar generator that may not be directly attached to the plant, which may lead to some like a more like contractual issues rather than technical. So technically you can do anything, but I'm from a very like a yeah concrete like operational viewpoint on the ground, it may be a little difficult to find the land availability next to the plant. So that means that most of the time we have some energy supply of the plant, but that would not be 100% of supplying the desalination plant, because besides the land availability, we have a capex consumption, of course, if we have a system that needs to be powering all, like a, so like addressing all of its needs over only sunlight hours. We have an infrastructure that is not used it at its full efficiency. So it's always a balance between CapEx and OpEx, and this is when like financed solutions for water sales contract and so on may be implemented and enforced, and we've done that, and it does display very good results. But eventually, it's in the end the client that is on that is deciding what is the most suitable solution for them.
Right. And if I understood correctly, I mean, your system is kind of limited by the efficiency of the current solar cell power and the efficiency of the current reverse osmosis available in the market somehow. So if you would take those two, which one is more important or more efficient for you to have? Is it efficient solar power or efficient reverse osmosis or both? I think it's both.
Both are very important because, for instance, if you are to have with the same solar generator an additional energy production of like 20%, you will be able to produce 20% more water. So this is like obviously critical, and that could mean better PVs, using trackers, like different ways of using that for sure. And for the desalination plants, it is obviously critical to have the right system up. And I guess in the end of the day, for our clients, what they ultimately want is really to get more water. So for them, it's more important to have a system that would work. And actually, like no matter what is the energy source, they have done all the modeling with the PV for operational expenditures according to solar energy costs. But in the end, if they need to substitute solar by another source on a case-by-case basis for emergency situation or in one or two different settings, like then they would definitely prefer having a better water system than a better energy system, because our clients are the water utilities.
And what is, I mean, just in terms of photovoltaic, what is the most efficient number that the market has reached so far that the market is supplied with
In
in
what
terms of
I'm
efficiency? I mean, the solar power that exists right now in the markets, what is the highest efficiency?
I know it's changing often, and so I am not fully comfortable with the latest innovations on that front. So I would have to get back to you on that, seeing with my technical team what is the most advanced we've gotten so far.
I would say that usually you are using the one with 20%, I think.
That's exactly the figures I had in mind, but I know there are a lot of innovations, and there were some like many like different experimentations and suppliers that were claiming to do higher than 20, reaching up to 25. And so I'm not really fully confident in which one we're using and which one is already available on the market right now from the literature I've read and all the public announcements.
And is it also like you would be flexible with the need of the customer, that if they need something very efficient, at the end of the day, the CapEx will be higher, but the innovation, you can assemble those two together, the latest solar power with the latest advanced reverse osmosis. So this is something that your team manage.
In the end, if the client is OPEC, CapEx driven, it's different than we are like for like if we are selling an EPC contract, like so pro like a construction project basically. And if we are a service company delivering water, then we have a different sensitivity to CapEx and OPEX and the balance that comes with it. But yeah, like we definitely are like a part of our DNA is doing quality systems. Like we do not want to go and try to compete with like a lower grade material constructions and other than like a really well acknowledged and established suppliers on the market, because we believe in the quality of their work, and we've experimented a lot of different ones, and this is the level of standard we don't want to be lowering.
If I look when I to your homepage, Osmosun operates in over 30 countries, if I'm correct. So how do you adapt, I mean, your solution to diverse geography? Because you know that the salinity is different, the environment is different. So what are the challenges that you face when you built for different places?
So the different level of adjustments are first on the solar, of course, but it's easy to like forecast and have a clear view of the solar irradiance in a given space in the world, because there are databases, and so we can model and anticipate how the solar is going to be and how many kilowatt peak we need to install in a given setting. So that is kind of easy to adjust and forecast. And then during the testing phase that we have in our factory, we do simulate, like replicate the solar irradiance we have in these targeted markets, so we can model that and replicate that in our factory in the testing phase. And then for the water quality, the difference in performance in the RO system will vary depending on that water quality, but there are different levels into this. Like the first one would be the pre-treatment for making sure that we basically only have the salinity that we need to be managing with the RO plants. The salinity itself will affect the level of pressure, the performances of the RO plant. But for now, it hasn't affected it in a way that the system would have to be drastically changed from one country to the other. The only constraint would be when there is a requirement to do a double pass system, which is a little more heavy. But other than that, which we've done and we've adjusted to that. But typically, like the systems would remain pretty similar.
Right. And I see also that Osmosol has been, used in emergency situations. I mean, could you share some examples where the system has been?
So the Osmosol units have that capacity to operate fully off grid from any seawater source, and so that made this a very handy system to have in stock in disaster relief stock of equipment, and have that rolled out. You roll out the PV, you roll out the water intake pipe, and then you have a suction pump and you start producing fresh water just like that in a context in which you have no alternative. So yeah, these are the kind of settings we have been implementing this. I am very sorry, Hakim. I have a battery problem. I'm going to go get my charger.
Sure.
I can take you with me. And
fine.
And we can continue from there. Sorry.
Yeah, no problem. Okay. Can I ask, or we'll take more bet?
I'm sorry, what's that?
Can I ask a question, or just?
Of course, yeah. Please feel free to ask the question. I'm gonna take my time to answer.
Yeah, exactly. So the next question would be in terms of quality and safety. I mean, how do you ensure that Osmosan will provide the required quality and safe water for the people? Are there some equipped with special sensors that people can track and then give them some warning?
So we have a quality control system that is testing and certifying the performances of the plants before shipment. And then upon commissioning, when we have the systems working, we make sure that the water quality delivered is matching the requirement and the specs of the tender or the client's requirements, basically. And then as far as the operation is concerned, we do not get involved much in the operation phase. So there is a given level of control that needs to be performed by the client or by the utility, and yeah, but basically we do not get involved in that.
Right. In terms of units, I mean, the operators that they will operate it, you know, that most of the time they don't have, the good enough knowledge and skills to deal with every component that you assemble, like from pumps, sensors, membranes, I mean, photovoltaic. So when you design the unit in engineering, do you make it in a way to be user friendly? And also when there's a troubleshooting, you think of them to do troubleshooting in very efficient and with less step.
Totally. We do make sure that the design is anticipated to be suitable for different levels of qualifications, but also when we implement, we make sure that we train the staff that will be in charge of operation. We are not operating ourselves, so that may be a split of the different work for the operation between the utility or the client and the operator, and then there could be also assistance from a company in charge of more like the maintenance operations. So the schemes are very diverse. There are different ways that it could be done, but we do make sure that the staff is trained before we leave the ground after commissioning.
Yeah. And is it monitored online? Do you keep access to the units afterwards, or it's up to the client to give you the access or not to the data?
Typically, the plants are installed in pretty remote contexts, or like pretty remote, at least far enough from our factory. And so, in this context, we could access, but typically we do not really get involved, and we do not have the opportunity to get on site if the client is not like requesting assistance from us, typically.
Right. And in terms of financial model, is there any kind of innovation, or is like, I mean, because there are some companies who sometimes they build and then they kind of licenses, they sell the water to some
We
companies,
do
they don't
that.
want to. Okay.
We sell the projects. We
So
sell
the
the
whole
units
unit.
and the project and the water selling models. Like we do it through partners and with partners, but like typically we would be selling the equipment.
Right. And in terms of, I would say, so what do you have right now in terms of innovation pipeline? So what are you developing so far in Osmosan?
So we remain focused on optimizing what we currently have available. So for the pairing between RO and the PV, and we also give a big focus on the different environment around the RO, namely the pre and post treatment. And by optimizing the pre-treatment, you will optimize the performance of the RO. And the post treatment is also an item in which there is a lot of cost savings to do for the operator as well.
You said pre-treatment, and the second one is
Post treatment, so
post-treatment.
before and after the RO plant. In
Okay.
the process flow diagram, you have the intake, you have the pre-treatment, the RO plant, and then the post treatment for like chlorination or remineralization, for instance, and then you have the distribution.
Okay, so there's also so many innovation can be done. I mean, you cannot desalinate everything, you can keep something as well. And also the
Exactly.
pressure, you can recover the pressure that you get in the concentrate. In terms of pre-treatments, do you usually use ultrafiltration or just conventional system like
We could
sun
use
filter?
ultrafiltration, we like multimedia filtration. Like the honestly, it's a case by case basis depending on the water quality. The challenges could be different depending on what we have to treat.
Yeah, because usually I would say, as you mentioned, if you have good pre-treated water, then you reduce the load on the reverse osmosis, and then also you reduce the let's say the risk or the potential of fouling for a long term. That's the other advantage that also you can do.
Yeah, correct.
And so while I'm talking about this, I'm just thinking about reverse osmosis here. So if you look to the market, what do you think is still needed to be done in terms of, I would say innovation, but in terms of improvements or advancements for the reverse osmosis? I know at the end of the day, you need to reduce the, let's say, the energy. You need to reduce the pressure that you need for every square meter for the membrane. So that's one thing.
That's definitely one thing, and yeah, I mean there is a lot to be done, but really the quality of the technical solution exists today. That could always be improved, and that would bring cost competitiveness and lower cost of water produced for the utilities and for the clients in the end. But I think already having a proper and sound operation of the water distribution networks is a way to get a really significant water saving achieved in so many different countries, and they may not even need to get into desalination because I believe technical solutions to make desalination the right way exist for every given solution context. So it's really about okay, finding the right spot for it, and also not implementing desalination if other water systems are relevant. Because I mean, I'm not necessarily selling my equipment there, but it's really like in a context where other solutions could be implemented, desalination shouldn't, and eventually that is likely to be more expensive than water reuse or water consumption optimization or solutions like that.
Yeah, and then so the wastewater treatment with solar power is something outside of the scope of Osmosan. That's the let's say to treat wastewater and get fresh water from the wastewater using solar energy, it's something is not in the scope of Osmosan.
Currently, we do not do.
Okay.
It could be a possibility in the future, but yeah, right now we do not.
Right. And I mean in terms of energy, renewable energy, would you is Osmosan is thinking about, let's say, using also other type of renewable energy than solar energy?
Typically, yeah, we there are a lot of other energy, renewable energy that could be used. Like wind is the first one that comes to
Yeah.
mind because it is operating 24/7 typically if it's windy, and it makes easier like a fluctuation loads than the solar, because like when you have a drop like a heavy rain cloud, the power con like the supply drop could be significant, but the wind is never stopping right away in such a sharp way, so it would be making the pairing easier, but it is also a lot more preliminary work to implement because you have to install metering mats and make sure that you have the right wind over a whole year before implementing wind turbines, and the maintenance of wind turbines is also a lot heavier than the maintenance of PVs. So it is technically possible. We've done that in different contexts through the energy mix. But in the end, the solar has the convenience of the implementation. It is very stupid easy to install. So that's really, yeah, for now remains the main focus.
Yeah, technically speaking, when you shut down the system the whole night, I'm assuming that's the reverse osmosis. You shut down the whole night because you don't have any solar energy.
That's correct.
So yeah, so how do you manage that the membrane is not fouled the day after that? So do you
We have
flush
a
it with
natural, like natural osmosis phenomenon that is bathing the membrane, so
that?
it's
Yeah.
backwashing naturally.
Oh, so you keep the so you keep this the feed concentrate on the top of the membrane, or what? Or you flush it with the clean water?
We flush it with the clean water. It's the natural flushing of the fresh water. So then we have the membranes bathing in fresh water all night to prevent the, as you said, like the damaging of the membrane.
Exactly. Yeah, because that's very interesting. I have seen one plant where they use reverse osmosis. It's an industrial plant. It's run 24/7. It's more than I think 5 or 6 years. Never stopped and never gets, let's say, scaling or fouling. So how they do this is like after every 2 hours or 3 hours, something like that, they flush the whole system a couple of minutes with, which is
Yeah,
really.
that is definitely like something that is limiting in terms of water production, because when you do not use the full capacity of the plant, you're not producing as much. But in the end, it's really enabling the longevity of the system. So, and we've seen similar situations in systems operating in for 10 years plus with the same membranes, no need for any replacements. And it's like, wow, okay, so you just have the right like design and the right like ways of operating it, and it's impressive and it's possible, and it's also making it frustrating to see how sometimes it's poorly operating in other contexts when they could, but they don't necessarily do it.
Yeah, and you mentioned a very good point. I mean, poorly operated, and then just previously you just mentioned that, and there are some places when you just need to operate your system efficiently, then you don't need to do any reverse osmosis, any desalination actually. So, or you're already wasting your water, so you may not need a
Exactly.
fancy solution. So this brings me to the question: if I take your solution where you combine reverse osmosis with, let's say, solar energy, solar power, so what are the challenges or the limitation that you see here in terms of upscaling? So one thing you mentioned is this, the footprints. It's not always available to have a large solar panel. So this is one challenge. So are there other challenges that you have that you think this concept itself need to overcome?
There's only so much you can address at a time. So really, energy was the first one, and then, like I mentioned, like pre-treatment and having the right water quality is really something that is something that if optimized, is finding the sweet spot is definitely helping. Like that would that is if you have a consistent steady water feed, you really help the supply of the like the longevity of the supply in the end. So that really is why we are focusing on these different elements for now.
Yeah, so it's, if I understood correctly, it's basically you are studying, let's say you are studying the data to kind of predict, because you have four seasons, and I assuming that the water quality temperature from the sea, it changed within the four seasons. So once you try to have very good model to anticipate and gives you which, how the pre-treatment should be tuned for each season, then the situation would be better, I think.
We've done that seasonal changes study, and yeah, that does display very interesting results. So this is part of the things we assess, but really through the pre-treatment approach, because the salinity is unlikely to really change that much, so the RO will not change, but the design of the pre-treatment will be really because of the water feed. And if you have like algae blooms or flooding or like a river mouth nearby, like that is all, these are all different factors that would affect the water salinity. So yeah.
Yeah. Are there any, let's say, challenges that you think, I mean, for scientists or researchers who are listening to the podcast, are there any challenges that you think science need to address in terms of algae bloom or something, in terms of developing really very innovative pre-treatments to really treat those kind of challenges, I would say. So, are there something that you need scientists and engineers to really do something, prepare it at the university and then take it? Because I know that companies, they need something to be really, at least is working.
That's for sure a technological break that then
Exactly.
could be rolled out to market. So the time to market is not too long. That's correct. Like definitely improvements in the pre-treatment, but also improvements in the membrane capacities and the fact that they would not like they would cope with different levels of water quality. Also, if the membranes are not as fragile, then the system is a lot more permissive, and that could be of help. So these are definitely elements that we do not have any grasp on directly. Like we can't impact this, but if there is some serious study and innovations that is done in this way, then we could implement it.
So, my final questions, Maxim, which is, I mean, could you share some, let's say, success stories and case studies where, let's say, Osmosan has not only benefited the customer, but also had a good impact on the environment?
I think the projects we have done in Cape Verde were really explicit in that front, because we, Cape Verde is an archipelago of islands, west of Africa, and basically it's been facing drought years after years, and it was more and more important in the and impacting the agriculture. And we started to have like migration of people leaving the country because they could not do their like their daily agriculture supply for themselves, and so they had to leave and get to the capital city. So that was becoming, from a climate challenge, it then became a social problem and then an economic problem. So it was a comprehensive crisis, I guess. And by actually desalinating brackish water that they had underground, that because they had seawater intrusions in their aquifer because of an earthquake or a volcanic eruption, then they could not irrigate their crops anymore. And by providing them with a system that would be fully operating with the sunlight that they have abundantly in Cape Verde, they were able to provide fresh water to then resume their agriculture programs. And it was a program funded by the FIDA, or the IDAF, from the Food and Agriculture Organization. And it was pretty successful. It had a very strong impact on the people. And by enabling them to continue irrigating their crops and living from their activity and supplying them with water. So yeah, this was definitely one of the yeah, very strong showcase that we've worked on and that we are really proud of.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Maxime. Is there anything that you would like to share with the audience before closing the episode?
No, I mean, thank you very much. I appreciate your interest, and yeah, hope this was insightful. And feel free to reach out if there is any questions.
Sure. Thank you very much, Maxime.
Thank you, Hakim.
Thanks.